You'd finish breakfast about what hour?
We'd finish breakfast around 7:30, maybe 20 to 8. See, it always varied because they'd be running the galleries different, or maybe it was late tallying the count. We'd be very, you know, a few minutes. But then we would get back to our cells.
How would you get back to your cells? You'd be marched back again?
We would line up, we'd march back to the cells, and we would lock in again. And we'd stay locked in varying times until they were ready to let you out for work. It'd be maybe 8, quarter after, and then they would let you out for your particular job assignment.
Now, how would you go to your job assignment?
Well, all the job assignments, usually all the men that work on the same assignment, they'll put in adjoining cells. So this way, like the hospital where I worked last, they'll open 20 cells that worked in the hospital, and we'd all line up according to height and march to the hospital.
Now, how long would you work at your job in the morning?
We would, it'd be maybe 8:30 we'd get there, between 8 and 8:30, and we'd work till around 11 or 10 after, and then we would, they'd say, going back, time to line up, and we'd line up and march back to our cells again.
And how long, what would happen to you then when you march back to your cells?
They'd march us back, we'd lock in again for the noon count. They'd have to get ready for the noon count, would be between 25 after 11 and quarter of 12.
In the summer, you would be allowed out in the yard during this period if you wanted?
Not before lunch, it would be right after lunch. In the summer schedule, would be two periods where you'd be out in the yard for 15 or 20 minutes, directly after meals, prior to going to your job assignment.
Now, getting back to the regular schedule, you'd be marched to lunch at what hour?
Well, they'd run the count, then they would tally it, and it would be usually at noon a bell would ring, signifying that the count was all right, and then they would start the running the galleries again, you know, opening the cells up and lining up according to height.
And was lunch the big meal of the day at Attica generally?
Yes, it was usually the largest meal. It was the best meal if there was one. And you'd line up then, and we'd all march around 12 or 10 after 12 and go to the mess hall. We would eat. It would be 12:30, maybe 12:40, and we would line up and march back to our cells and lock in again.
Now, how long would you stay locked in?
Until they called your particular group to go to work again. It would be approximately 1, 10 after, and they would open up like where I worked at the hospital. They would open the cells up again, and you'd line up according to height and march to the hospital.
And how long would you remain at work then?
You'd work until 3 or 2 and quarter of 3 and a quarter after. It varied then, too. And then they would tell you to line up, and you'd line up again, and you march back to your cell block.
And then what?
Well, this time, I worked in C block, and being a closed cell system, you had to get your water for the night, your hot water. And you'd water up, and if you wanted to, you could go to the yard until a little after 4.
Well, what do you mean by you'd water up and have to get your water for the night?
Well, the cells, you don't have any hot water. If you want to shave or wash your clothes or, you know, wash yourself, wash your body, get some of those, you know, clean up, you had to get your hot water at 3 o'clock where I was locking, because this is the only time you could get it.
How physically would you get the hot water?
They sell these plastic buckets in the commissary. I believe they're, just rubber-sized plastic buckets, and you get one or two of those, and you go down to this water room and fill up your bucket with water and take it back to your cell.
And would that be the only hot water that you would have for the whole day, except on your day to go to showers?
Right. This had to suffice until you got out again.
Now, you said you'd get your water, and then if you wanted to go in the yard, you'd go in the yard?
It was optional. You could go to the yard, or you could lock in your cell.
And if you chose to go to the yard, what would you do?
Well, you could walk around the yard, or they have sports. In the fall, they have football. In the winter, they have volleyball. In the spring, they had baseball. And they had handball court. Or you could play checkers or cards.
Now, did you go to the yard much?
No, not too much.
We have to pause for a moment while the court stenographer replaces his paper. How is it going? It's many reactions in
During the break in the proceedings, the court stenographer is changing his paper for continuing record of this proceeding. There is, of course, a complete stenographic record, and then we, of course, have a complete videotape record of this proceeding. The witness now appearing is William E. Jackson, a former inmate who spent some 3 years at Attica and was there during the period of the rebellion. He had been sent to Attica for possession of 3 bags of marijuana, according to his own testimony a little earlier today. He's being interrogated by Arthur L. Lyman, who is the general counsel of this committee, the commission, the special commission on Attica, which is investigating conditions in that prison. We noticed in the audience that a number of the participants are holding a banner up at this time, the banner reading, "Free Slave Labor, Free the Prisoners at Attica." Now, I assume that Mr. Lyman is ready to resume his questioning of the witness, William E. Jackson, so we'll go back to the actual commission hearings here in the studios of WXXI in Rochester, New York.
Did you go to the yard often?
No, not myself. I didn't go to the yard very often.
And if you didn't go to the yard, you'd be locked in your cell from what hour?
Usually I'd be around 20 after 3, 3:30, I would lock in for the evening.
Well, didn't you go to supper?
No, I didn't. Supper was optional, and I usually passed on supper.
Were you unique in that respect?
No, I would say supper, they used to use like one mess hall, because at least 50% didn't go to supper.
And what did you get to eat for supper, generally?
Oh, I get visits from my wife, and she would bring out packages, and I could supplement my diet with her packages and what I could buy in the commissary, you know, items that I'd buy cheese, make cheese sandwiches or something.
What did they serve in the dining hall if you did go?
It was usually the same coffee, a bowl of soup, and possibly some cold cuts.
Now, do I understand that if you did not go to supper and you did not go to the yard, you'd be locked in your cell from approximately 3:30 on?
Yes, sir.
Until 7 the next morning?
Yes, sir.
Now, what did you do with your time?
Well, at the time, I used to, prior to the uprising, I'd done hobby work. I done leather work and some painting, or I would read books or listen to the earphones, things like this.
Now, were you provided with a radio?
No, not a radio. It was a earphone, a plug-in jacks, like.
And how many channels could you get on that?
It was like 3 channels. You'd have the first channel would be rock and roll or sports. The second channel would be TV audio, and the third channel would be like Muzak or easy listening music.
And was there any television available for you?
Well, there was television, but it was they had one TV set in each yard for all the inmates.
And if you wanted to watch television, where would you have to go?
You'd have to go out in the yard. I went out a couple times, you know, and you could only watch it. Like, I worked, so I would get out there maybe at 3:30, and at 10 after 4, I have to go in, or 20 after 4. So you go out there, and all it's on at that time is soap operas. They aren't too interesting to watch to me, you know. So, and it gets cold out there. In the wintertime, we used to go out and watch, like, a football game, you know. And prior to the uprising, we'd take a thermos of coffee and go on out, and you could watch a football game, or you know, a special movie or something and see what was going on. But it gets pretty dang cold, you know. It's cold up there. You're sitting out in the cold watching TV.
And this would be in the yard time that you've talked about that you could watch the TV.
Yes, sir.
Now, how late could you keep your lights on?
The electricity was shut off at 11 o'clock.
So that from approximately 3:30 to 11 o'clock, you'd be in your cell with your lights on, able to do hobby work or reading?
Right.
Was there a time after which you were not supposed to talk?
At 8 o'clock, they rang a bell, which meant you wasn't allowed to converse with anybody else. And so you had to, you know, everybody was quiet then.
Now, how did you converse with other inmates when you were locked in your cell? Each person's in his own cell, I take it.
Right. It's all separate. In C block, you have a real small window. You look out of the cell. And you just holler out if you want to get a hold of somebody, you know. Holler out their name and maybe they'll hear you and they'll come to the door and you can talk for a couple minutes. In some of the other blocks, A, D, and B have what they call open cells. One side of the walls is all bars. In other words, it's the whole cell, the front of the cell is just bars. And so it's a little easier on them, but you can't see the man.
Well, I take it that the sides of all of the cells are solid walls, am I correct?
Right.
And the difference between the types of cells in C block and A, B, and D block is that in the case of A, B, and D block, there are bars in front.
Right.
In the case of C, there's
a
little
solid
window.
Solid door. You've got a solid door with a little window in it.
Now, you have more privacy in C block?
Well, not only that, C block is like a preferential block for an inmate to get into because in C block, it's more privacy. You can, the door is, like if you want a little quiet, you've got it for reading, or if you play a musical instrument, you won't be disturbing everybody. And also, it's got its own radiator, and it's got a window that looks out on the yard. Now, this is at a premium because the other galleries, the windows are across the hall from you. And if the steam heat comes on, this thing will cook you one night and freeze you the next, you know. And it's pretty bad. So at least when you have a window and a radiator, you can regulate your heat.
Now, did you ever compute how many hours you would roughly spend in your cell each day?
It would go 16... I don't know, if you counted all the little times you had to go back for the counts, you'd go in maybe 15, 20 minutes for each count, and it could go as high as 18 hours. It could go as high as 18 hours easy on me. If you didn't take yard, you could be in 18 hours a day.
And how did this affect you, this routine over 2.5 years?
I guess kind of, it's like a... You just get into a rhythm and you just do the time, that's all. You just get used to it and you just keep doing the time. Because you know, one of these days you'll get out, that's all. That's all you can do.
Now, what about your jobs? What did you do in your first job at Attica?
We worked in the silk screen area. They made the road signs for like... the throughways, these great large green road signs, stop signs, curve signs, all these type of signs for the state. We made these up there at the silkscreen shop.
What did you get paid?
A nickel a day.
How many hours a day did you work?
It was about 4.5.
Did you learn a trade?
No.
Why not?
Silkscreen. After I got in and I was reading some books on it. It's all a hand method. See, they do it all by hand. They have the labor available, so they use all hand processing, and anybody can pull a squeegee over and make the sign. It's all handwork, and there really isn't nothing you can learn. It's antiquated though. The whole system has changed now.
Now, after your job in silkscreening, where did you work?
I requested a transfer and went to the print shop. This was in the same area. It was in the school. And I went to work at the print shop.
And what did you do there?
I was doing running a printing press or compositing type, this kind of work.
Did you learn a trade there?
No. They have there's no linotype or any modern things. This is the old method like Gutenberg had. You set the type by hand, and this is what we did.
What did you get paid at the print shop?
Started out at a nickel a day, and they had a strike over in B block, and at this time they changed the pay scale and went up to a quarter a day.
Now, you said they had a strike. You mean the inmates?
Yes, the inmates in B block that worked in the metal shop had a strike that they were protesting because of their work in the metal shop.
And incidentally, what was your trade before you entered prison?
I was doing factory works, worked in metal work, machine work is what I was doing.
Was there some reason that you didn't ask to be assigned to the metal shop since you had been in that trade before?
Well, yes. When I was over in the reception company, I found out that the B block or the metal shop area was notorious for what they call bandits, or these guys that have a rough off on homosexuals. You know, they try to make people into homosexuals and everything. So I just stayed away from the whole area. I didn't want nothing to do with it.
Now, you say that after the strike, your pay scale went up to 25 cents?
Yes, sir.
How did you get the jobs? Do you ask for a particular job?
You ask, and you find out possibly through inmate rumors that there's a job coming open. And after I was in the print shop, I wanted this job in the identification office. So I put in a tab and went to the law library, which is by the identification office, and went and talked to the officer, and I put in a slip for it, and he went and said that he'd like to have me for the job. You got to usually go see the officer or talk to him.
What did you get paid when you took a job in the identification unit?
That was 80 cents a day.
Was that one of the best paying jobs in the institution?
Yes, it was. It was the highest, that's the highest rate right there. It take you like 2 years and you could be up to a dollar a day. It's the best job in the institution.
Now, you said you put in a tab. What do you mean by put in a tab?
Everything you want in the institution, you write a tab for. You write a little slip, like if you'd like to talk with a chaplain or something, or talk with somebody, you write it out on a slip of paper and drop it in the mailbox.
Now, you said before, Mr. Jackson, that when you came to Attica, you had to buy your water bucket, and you mentioned also that you would supplement your diet by buying things at the commissary. Can you tell me whether you felt that you were provided with all of the necessaries by the institution?
Prior to the uprising, you had to buy your toothpaste. You had to buy your own soap, you had to buy your laundry soap. If you wanted deodorant, you had to buy that. If you needed a bucket, you had to buy that. They provided you with a towel when you went in there. It was about this size. It wasn't even a cannon towel.
Could you hold your hands
about,
up?
About like here. And it's a small white towel, and it isn't like even a cannon towel. It wasn't even absorbed. You have to buy all these items. It's expensive to live in a prison.
What about toilet paper?
They provided you with a roll every 5 weeks.
And did you supplement that some way?
You had to. If you don't, you're hurting.
So you bought toilet paper also?
Yes, I had to.
I have here a commissary price list of June 1971. I don't know whether it can show on the screen. Just going over some of the items that were sold. You could buy coffee. You talked about the fact that the coffee was not well brewed. Would you buy coffee there?
Yes, I would either buy coffee in the commissary, or I'd have my mother bring it up in the packages.
Now, on this price list, it refers to a 10-ounce jar of coffee at $1.37. You also could buy soup there.
Yes, sir.
And other things that would have to be heated.
Yes, you could buy soups. They had like it was one kind of a rice you could get, and you could cook it up and things like this. You could buy cans of this spaghetti, all prepared, and things like this. But you'd have to heat them to eat them.
Now, what were you provided to heat these foods that the prison sold at the commissary?
Nothing.
Proper illegal heating device. How were those made?
I made one last night. I'll show it to you.
You made one last night at our request?
Right. This is commonly referred to as a dropper. It's,
Get the camera on it close so that it can be explained?
Like you use two razor blades and you put sticks or matchsticks between it, wrap string around it or thread, and you hook your wires to it. And you just get a piece of a lamp cord. And what we always used to use was paper clips. You put some tape around them. You drop this into the water, and you plug in these two paper clips. And it works by electrolysis. The water acts as a conductor, and this is how you make hot water.
What would you plug the two paper clips into?
You get what we call these female plugs. You pull out your light bulb, and you're in the dark, and you plug this in. You drop this in the water, and then plug these in one at a time, because I'll shock you if you get them both at the same time.
Now, you said about 75% of the inmates used a device like this. Was the device, in fact, tolerated at the institution?
It depended on who the officer was, if he found it. Some officers would walk right by your cell and it's in the water and it's bubbling away and he wouldn't say nothing. The next one would come down and have him hit your door and take it away from you and you'd be keep locked for a few days.
Would it depend also on who the inmate was?
Definitely. If you were what they considered, you didn't bother nobody, they would let it slide a little more. But if you were spoke out against them at all, then they got a perfect bust then, because this is illegal device and they got you then.
Now, in talking about things you had to buy at Attica, what did you do about shaving?
Well, we had to buy our own razor blades. You were required to shave and you had to buy or have your razor blades sent in.
What about lather?
Use hand soap. Or you could buy brushless shaving cream at the commissary. They would sell all the items at the commissary like that.
Have there been changes in this since the uprising?
Yes, since the uprising, now they provided one of these lather machines like it's in a barber shop at the end of the gallery, and they'll give you razor blades, and they'll give you toothpaste now. They give you toothpaste, toilet paper, and these other items, soap, on request now.
And how often were you granted the privilege of taking a shower?
Nearly every place in the prison, it's one shower a day. And
one shower a day?
One shower a week. And then when I moved to a different job, this identification job, they changed it and they let me have two showers a week. But nearly like the whole metal shop, the school, all of those was, unchanging. They got one shower a week.
Now, there were some jobs where there was a shower on location. In those instances, how frequently could you take a shower?
E-Block, they would let them have showers there. It was nearly every night or when they needed one.
But in general population, if you weren't in a place in which there was a shower on job, at your job location, you would be restricted at that time to one shower...
A week.
A week.
You'd have to march with the company and go to the shower room.
Now, where did inmates get the money from to buy these things which you've described as necessaries prior to September, shaving cream, razor blades, additional foodstuffs, toilet paper, toothpaste, etc.?
Well, like myself, I got money from home in packages, and I had like I said, I had the highest paying job in the institution.
And with the highest paying job in the institution, could you afford to buy what you needed, or did you have to supplement it from home?
My wife still sent me money because, you know, reading, I send for books or whatever things I wanted to read because the library was, there was nothing there.
Did you say before how often you got the toilet paper?
It was once every 5 weeks.
Right. Now, how did you keep in touch with home?
I would write home. The institution provided one letterhead per week with postage paid. And this one was free, and if you wanted to send any other letters, you had to buy postage, too. I used to buy $4 or $5 worth of postage at a time, so, you know, you have sufficient postage, because if you don't have the money to send the letters, you don't mail your letters out.
And what about visiting?
I was getting visits once a month. Some people get them, you can get them up to 5 times a month. But the visits are, it's set up like a U shape. The inmates are on the outside of the U, and the visitors are on the inside of the U, and there's a wire mesh that's about maybe 6-7 foot high, dividing the two parts. And I have 2 children, and during the entire time that I was in Attica or in prison, I didn't have my children visit me, because if they want to see an animal, they can go to a zoo. You know, you couldn't even touch them. The gate is in the way. And how are your children going to understand? My children at the time were 3 and 4 years old, and to try to explain to them why I'm in a cage, you know, I just couldn't do it. So I never seen them during this entire period.
You've been painting word pictures of Attica, Mr. Jackson. I think it would probably be useful at this time if we could show a movie that the commission made under the supervision of Judge Willis, who is the first deputy general counsel and who's sitting on my left. And Judge Willis can describe and narrate the movie. I refer to Charles Willis as Judge Willis because that was his position before he joined the commission and took over supervisory responsibilities.
I think I'd like to read this first. Before you do that, I wonder if it would be appropriate to introduce Mr. Hennix, who has now come. Is this microphone live?
Yes.
Extremis Hennix, who has now made it here, give us 100% attention, attendance. All members of the commission, we're glad to welcome you, Amos.
Glad to be here. Late, but I'm here.
All right, we must... perhaps we should begin by... telling what Attica is before we show the film. Now, prisons are often remote places, easily ignored. The Attica Correctional Facility lies next to the village of Attica in rural Wyoming County. The principal industry of this village is the correctional facility. Few of us have seen a prison or correctional facility close up. We tend to imagine prisons as we've seen them in films. To provide a basic understanding of what Attica is, we have made some film of our own.
Back tourists. For those who must come here to visit inmates, the journey to the main gate is long and expensive. No bus or train or plane runs to Attica. The walls completely surrounding Attica are 30 feet high. They are sunk 12 feet below the ground, built of stone blocks overlaid with concrete. But they do not directly enclose inmates. Behind the wall is a wire fence. Behind the fence, the walls of the cell blocks, and within the blocks, the barred cells where inmates spend most of their time. A prison is a series of boxes within boxes. The walls are the outermost box across the strip of empty green lawn. Behind the wall is the administration building, the prison's operational center, separated from the prison proper that lies beyond a series of gates. It is a part of prison law that the former inmate finds it hard to learn that on the outside, no one opens doors for him. Inside, a guard must unlock, open, shut, and lock these doors and gates every time a person or group passes through. Between the administrative offices and the prison itself is the visiting room, where an inmate may see visitors only once a week on any day of the week. Inmates and visitors speak to each other under the surveillance of a guard through heavy wire mesh. Inmates are strip searched before and after each visit. Beyond the administrative area begins a series of electric gates that whir open and shut as one passes through them deeper into the tight security of the inner prison. By the time one has passed through all of them, seven gates in all have sealed the path back to the main gate in the outer wall, and one more mechanical gate must open to allow entrance to A block, one of the four largest residential units. We have now entered the third of a series of boxes. The first site is the block's office that manages the daily life of its occupants. These posts are manned by uniformed correction officers and clerks who are inmates. Inmates who hold one of the most sought-after jobs in prison. A tier of cells is a prison neighborhood, a street of close acquaintances. There are three types of cells in Attica. The most common is a 5-by-8-foot cell with blank walls on three sides and a barred sliding gate. The closest window is across the corridor. For all inmates, the cell is the center of his life. They spend from 16 to 23 hours every day in these cubicles. One of the residential cell blocks contains a different type of cell, not larger, but with a window cut into the back wall, providing a view for the inmate to contemplate. These cells have solid doors, not barred gates, providing a greater degree of privacy. In E block, the cells have hinged doors and are almost like private rooms. This block houses an experimental prison program, the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, financed by federal funds, which will be described in detail later in these hearings. When inmates move from place to place through the prison, they march informally, two by two, in companies guarded by correction officers. Most inmates walking to personal appointments can move only under guard. Twice a week, the companies of inmates are marched to a central shower room. Before the events of September 1971, inmates bathed once a week. Since then, a 100% improvement has been made. Showers twice a week. Three times a day, the inmate companies march to one of two mess halls. Stools and tables are fixed to the floor. The table settings are simple. The sugar shakers are a recent innovation. The spoons, the only cutlery at most meals, are equivalent to a pass for leaving the mess hall. No one may leave without returning or turning in a spoon. When inmates apply for medical attention, they pass through the dispensary for preliminary diagnosis. If medical personnel determine nothing more elaborate is required, simple medications such as aspirin, laxative, and tranquilizers are administered on the spot. Attica's services for medical purposes will be described fully in the course of these hearings. Most inmates hold jobs. Some of them, such as the laundry job, serve Attica and its population. This is a self-contained society in many respects. This huge industrial plant washes, dries, and presses the clothing and linen of the entire institution, from the plainest cells to the superintendent's house. About 15% of the inmate population works in the metal shop. These are really huge factories with giant machines for metal fabrication. They can take sheets and bars of metal and punch, bend, and weld them into almost any configuration. The shops are set up to make lockers and filing cabinets for state institutions. A few inmates perform automotive tasks in the prison's garage, which serves two purposes. It maintains the prison's own vehicles and also provides a limited training program for inmates wishing to acquire automotive skills. Inmates working here have access on the job to shower and toilet facilities, functional, if not exactly private. When work is done, recreation means the yard during certain specified periods. There are four of these yards in the space enclosed by the four largest cell blocks, and no matter what the season, they are the only recreational spaces, the only places and spaces for socialization among the inmates. The surface of the yards is part concrete, part bare earth, and part grass. Two of the yards are equipped with some recreational equipment. There are basketball hoops, a volleyball net, a concrete pylon that serves as a handball court, which was built by the inmates. There are benches and tables for checkers and chess. All exercise and outing take place in these yards. There's a television, too, in the recreational program, but the sets are mounted in the open air and may be watched only during daylight hours, regardless of the outside temperature, which drops below zero during the winter. Prison ingenuity is well known, and even though prisoners locked in their cells cannot see each other, some find ways to share a game.
We have seen glimpses of Attica in these pictures, but as our presentation proceeds, we'll gain much greater insights into prison life. All of the aspects of prison life that the film touched on briefly will be presented in detail. What will emerge from our presentation, therefore, is not only a picture of the events at Attica in September 1971, but also an intimate look at what prison life is like and how prisons are run. Thank you.
Mr. Jackson, in that film that we saw, there was a glimpse of some hands through the bar. Could you see that?
Yes, sir.
Tell everybody what that is, because it was very hard to view it on this film.
Many times, if you have two adjoining cells, men will go to extremes to get adjoining cells and enjoy, like, cards or chess. And what they'll do, they'll set it out there. Even though they can't see each other, they'll play a game of cards or chess, or this is their activity in the evening, you know, something to do, and it's a recreation.
So you'd see the hands outside the cells.
Right.
What about checkers? How are checkers played at night during these hours that you're locked in the cells?
I've seen men play them like maybe five or six cells apart, and they'll have two checkerboards, one checkerboard in each cell, and the man will holler like, Karina, night, and then a couple minutes later, the other guy will holler back, and they both are playing the checker game.
And they have a numbered chess or checkboard?
Right, and then this way they can make their moves, and they have these games at night, you know. And this is how they have their chess games.
And what about mirrors as a way of seeing what's going on in the down the gallery? You can only look out in front in C block, and in others you don't have full vision. How would people look to see what was happening?
Well, the best way is, like, you got a mirror. With this here, they complain about the mirror sticking out. So you break one, and you get a little piece. And you stick it out there, and then you can look. Like, you look at the mirror here, and you can see what's going on down the hallway. Who's out there, who's talking, or what's going on, because you can't see out. And especially in C block, you can, your restriction is, your vision is restricted, like an area like this. So you only see, like, maybe 10 cells across the hall, and you don't know what's going on, so they use a piece of mirror, and this way you can see what when the mailman's coming by, when the count man's coming by, or whatever.
Where did you get the mirrors from?
You buy them from the prison commissary.
And is there a lot of hustling on at Attica for people who can't get money from home and whose jobs pay the lower pay scales?
Oh, yeah, you have gambling, or some guys, like a man who works in the laundry, he makes money doing this, or a man who maybe does hobby work or something, he can, he'll sell or trade for cigarettes, or any items, possibly like a watch is sold for cigarettes, or a, make a wallet is sold for cigarettes. This is the medium of exchange in the institution. Is in cigarettes.
I see we're coming toward the lunch recess, and I think, Dean McKay, that if it is agreeable to you that we could stop Mr. Jackson's testimony now and resume after the recess.
We'll resume the testimony, Mr. Jackson, after the lunch recess at 2 o'clock. Thank you.
End slave labor, free the Attica prisoners. End slave labor, free the Attica prisoners. End slave labor.